10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal. Oh, that was hard fought, but we do have out and about. We're about 3 minutes late. Sorry for those of you who set your time by this show, but we had little technical difficulties getting the music to go. But be that as it may, you are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and or 92.3 FM. Also streaming from KYRS.org all across the globe. And I have my friends from the theater here today. Hello, friends from the theater.
Hello.
It is so good to have you here. And we're going to talk about The Triumph of Love,
yes,
which is the new play, which is put on by Inland Classical Theater. And we're going to talk a little bit about Inland Classical Theater because we've got some of the principals here who just happened also to be in the play. What is going on? Okay, why don't we just go around and do an introduction? Say who you are in the play. Say who you are in the Inland Classical Theater.
Hello, world. My name is Jeffrey St. George, my reality base name. I play Harlequin in The Triumph of Love, and I also happen to be the executive director of Inland Classical Theater.
Hello, I am Abby Constable. I am playing Leonide in Triumph of Love, and I also serve as the board president for Inland Classical Theater.
My name is Deborah Marlowe, and I play Leontine in Triumph of Love, and I have no association whatsoever with Inland Classical Theater,
okay,
except being fortunate enough to play with him on stage.
Okay. Well, wait. By this time the show is over, you're going to be in.
He keeps saying nice things like that. You bet.
Yeah. And I'm Steve Lloyd. I am Ermacrat in The Triumph of Love, and I am a fan of the folks of Inland Classical Theater. That's my part.
That was good.
Thanks.
Politically.
Yeah, I did that well.
Yeah.
Very
nice. And thanks.
Did I mention I was a fan, too?
Now, so this, I guess, you know, it's not fair to say this is a retooling of Spokane Shakespeare's Society because it's an entirely different venture, but you have some of the same people involved. And so let's talk a little bit about Inland Classical Theater, just sort of let people know, did you decide that you're going to open it up to more plays besides Shakespeare, or what's the deal?
Yeah, so Inland Classical Theater is focused on bringing classical works, which you can interpret as public domain for the most part, into the public forum. So we take old work that we believe still has relevance to the modern age, and we put our modern lens on it, and we put it up for the viewing pleasure of Spokaneites around the region.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
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 Abby?
We love Shakespeare. We are always going to love Shakespeare, but we also realize that there is a plethora of other classical plays that a lot of people maybe aren't familiar with, such as The Triumph of Love. And so we really wanted to create a space that went beyond just Shakespeare, that could introduce people to new plays, new genres, new eras that maybe they never thought about seeing before.
Yeah.
And so far, with this play, I think it's been a success.
That's cool. Now, as far as the public domain, is this play, so I've read that this play, there's been a couple of reiterations from the original, right? I mean, mm-hmm. There's a musical and then another movie off of it, right?
Yes.
So is this play really in the public domain still, or how does that work?
Good news, Maeve. You're making me eat my words almost immediately. So while we set out,
okay,
the business strategy was always
I didn't mean
public
to do
domain.
I would never shame my guests like
public
that.
Domain. public domain. We took a big old departure from that for our second show out of the gate. So this is indeed a licensed work. It was a adaptation by Stephen Wadsworth, written in 92. The play itself dates back to the 1700s and originally written in French. And the reason that we're using an adapted work is that I don't speak French so good.
That's okay. Well, that's a good reason. Now, this just occurred to me. If you had a book that was in the public works, would you consider turning that into a play?
So one of the lovely things about public domain is that if you've got a book and it's in the public domain, you are welcome to adapt it into a stage play. So the idea has come across our radar a couple of times.
Okay.
But you know what? If you're interested, Maeve, you got a book you want to translate into a play for me?
No.
Oh.
The Poseidon Adventure.
Poseidon Adventure.
But that's not a book. It was a movie. So I think that'd be a great musical.
Put it on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is this story about, this triumph of love?
Love versus reason. That's the central question of this play. And by the way, it was made into a movie in 2016 with Ben Kingsley and Fiona Shaw, just FYI.
Okay.
But that's kind of the central question of it, is do you follow your heart or do you follow your mind? And it's, I mean, obviously you can tell from the title who wins out, Triumph of Love, but the process of evaluating that for the characters, for all the characters really, is funny and interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Would you guys like to kind of go through and talk about who your characters are and how they interact in the play?
Yeah, absolutely. So I play Harlequin, who is a masked character. One of the interesting things about this show is that it utilizes Commedia dell'arte. And for those of you who don't know, its most notable feature is these big, glorious, and ugly masks. When you think about Commedia, you can think about cartoon characters. So myself, as well as Dimas, played by Max Quintal, as well as Kareem, played by Jazz Vega, are all masked servant characters. And so our role in this play is to go around, cause mischief, have a little bit of fun ourselves, and otherwise bring a whole lot of joy.
Is that so? Wearing a mask, and the masks are fantastic looking. Is that the whole idea for an audience to see these masks and to kind of go, oh, goofballs?
So the masks are really interesting on their effect on the audience perception. So you come out, you're wearing a mask, the audience insight on an immediate basis is, boy, that's weird.
Yeah.
Boy, that's a little creepy. And so one of the just lovely things about masks is that they can effectively create magic on the stage, because after a couple of minutes, the audience stops looking at the mask and just accepts it as a character on stage.
Yeah.
So it's not strange or bizarre or unusual anymore. It's just a real life cartoon character that's running around.
Okay.
And so one of the wonderful things about that is that you can just do impossible things.
Yeah.
And the audience accepts it as truthful behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. So I play Leonid, and she kicks off the story. There's a whole wonderful exposition monologue, but she is a princess whose family came to the throne in less than ideal circumstances. And so her family took over from our other character, Aji, played by Ali Aboud. His family is the true rulers. Leonid's family took over, and Aji was, as a child, was taken away and hidden, and she's learned about his existence, so she goes out to find him, to right the wrongs, and immediately falls in love. And so her only plan is to just dress up as a man and sneak onto the estate where he's living, owned by Amokrat, where his sister Leontine lives, and she's got to sort of just figure out how to get Aji to fall in love with her and just fix everything through love and deceit.
And this is not a departure for you. The the gender bending stuff.
Yeah.
You. I mean, that seems, you know.
Seems to be my corner. Yeah. Playing Rosalind a couple years ago, and As You Like It. Yep. So I've kind of got the corner on our company.
Good for you. All right.
Lucky dog.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful.
Leontine wears a mask of an invisible sort. Her heart is masked behind reason because her brother, Amarcrat, has sort of set them up in this retreat, this life of retreat living where we study reason and follow our minds and develop our minds.
He's
and all
a
that.
Philosopher, right? I mean,
He is. And Amarcrat helps him in that endeavor. I mean, Leontine helps Amarcrat in that endeavor. But I think underneath Leontine's invisible mask, which quickly comes off in the play, she really is a romantic at heart. And she's in love with love. And so that's kind of her journey, realizing that she doesn't want to be led just by reason. She wants to also follow her heart, and that's important to her.
Yeah.
And how she discovers that about herself is funny and quirky, I think, and kind of endearing, too.
I enjoyed you so much in Julius Caesar. Almost a year ago.
Yeah,
This must be kind of fun to have more of a lighthearted departure, but still within a classical realm.
Well, for me personally, I just finished Tennessee Williams' Glass Menagerie, and I play Amanda Wingfield. And there's nothing more polar opposite than Leontine and this, and Amanda Wingfield and Glass Menagerie.
Right.
So, and they were on the heels of each other. So, yes, you're right. It is 180 degrees and quite delightfully so.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah, so Amarcrat, as Abby said, and also as Deb said, kind of cloistered everyone off to protect Aji, and living that kind of austere life, wrote a lot of philosophical texts around the idea of reason over love, right? Which is really easy to say when you're alone with only yourself. So the beauty of Amarcrat's story is that as soon as it gets tested, as soon as you're out in the world where somebody is actually testing your ability to actually avoid love, it crumbles pretty quickly, which is a lot of fun to play and play with Abby on that work, just kind of watching him fall apart and succumb to those feelings. But that's one of the things I thought was really interesting about the character is that that's that kind of truth of, it's easy to say, I don't need a relationship if I live like a monk, you know, somewhere. Like, that's easy to say until somebody shows up and becomes the catalyst. So, and she's a very effective catalyst.
Thank you. Thank you. I try.
Have you found people kind of, because this is the second week, right? Or you've had one week already?
We've had two. We have one more weekend.
Okay. So have you found the audience perception of your character kind of changing through this? Or have you started changing your character a little bit in response to the audience?
I haven't changed the character at all, but you do see the audience kind of, when Amarcrat appears, Amarcrat definitely appears in a very stern manner, but through the work of Leonid, starts to kind of unravel, and I always know we got him. Like, I know Abby and I got him when you start to hear them sympathize. They're like, this poor man, because he's falling apart. He's all of his reasons going out the window, and it's actually pretty funny. You can start to hear them start to go, oh no,
There's a couple of nights where I've stopped and go, am I the villain? Am I the bad guy in this?
Yeah. So not much change to that, but the people do kind of go on that journey with both of our characters, actually, both Leontine's and mine. And I think it's fun to see the audience kind of awaken to how we're, you know, overcoming it.
So. How do you like the Mac Amphitheater?
Oh, it's lovely.
I love it.
It's great. Yeah. Well, and this play is set in a garden in, the original, the way it was written. It's set in a beautiful French garden. So being outside in the amphitheater at the Mac is just a glorious setting for it. It's really wonderful.
We did Much Ado there, and I really liked, there's, I think it's a Thursday night or something like that. It was like family night or something. So all these families wander through. And I was kind of like dressed, I would say, not scantily, but provocatively. And so I loved to kind of stand there as the families went by and, you know, eat some food from the, you know, from the table in front of the green room. And yeah, it was kind of fun. Have you had a lot of families kind of watch the show, or?
We've had great representation from a number of families that have little ones. My little baby girl being one of them.
She must be really big by now.
Oh, no. Oh, she is just about to turn four. Wow. Still hilariously undersized. still very much a lap child. So this was her first straight play that she came to see.
Oh, nice.
And what a privilege that was. I was so proud of her. She managed to remain engaged, you know, maybe not thoughtfully, but I think she took a lot of joy out of the relatively slapstick behavior on stage. So we've got people all the way from 3.5 years old to preteens to teenagers, yeah, to full-blown adults to your usual matinee crowd is, yeah, how I'll describe them. And we love you, matinee crowd. Don't you go changing.
Oh,
you
no.
Physically cannot.
Well, eventually.
And I think that's one of the strong parts of this show is that it appeals to a really very broad demographic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just permission to kick back and experience a little bit of joy in your life for a couple of hours.
Hey, so it's about a two-hour show with a 15-minute intermission, or?
Well, you know, I'd hate to mislead anybody. It is a 2.5-hour show and a 15-minute intermission. So
really, for the price of admission, you're getting so much more of a play.
Pennies.
Yes.
Yeah. Pennies.
And honestly, the action of the play is so quick, it does not feel like 2.5 hours.
Do people follow it pretty well?
Yeah. As long as you don't miss the first 10 minutes. You'll want to show up on time.
It's a lot of exposition.
Happens in the first 10 minutes.
Now, you know, it's because it's outside, people can bring... And we'll talk a little bit about how people can get tickets here in a few minutes, but people can bring in all sorts of food. They can't bring in booze, but they can bring in soft drinks, right?
Absolutely. Yep. So nothing's off limits except for alcohol. So bring a picnic, bring a Costco rotisserie chicken.
Yeah.
Bring whatever you want.
Have you seen people like eating like tearing apart a carcass of a turkey or anything?
Well,
not on this show,
but it's been done.
Yeah. One of the first nights, we did definitely have somebody bring like a whole cooler, like a massive cooler, and sat up front, and they were having a wonderful time.
Yeah.
But I was like, that's a lot of stuff. I wonder, that's a big picnic.
Know that.
Oh, yeah.
Was I there for that show?
I think so. I hope so. Yeah. I remember doing lines with you.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I must have been there. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, for the value of the price of admission are the costumes. Mm. They're just exquisite. Mm. And so the look of the show, although the set is not involved, it's not, you know, there's not a big, huge, you know, firm foundational set because it's outdoors in this amphitheater.
Right.
It's a lovely set, but the costumes are just iconic and beautiful. And Abby B did such a beautiful job either building the costumes from scratch or borrowing them from SFCC. But they're really, really lovely. And in a way, especially for the Commedia dell'arte characters, the costumes are a character all of their own.
Yeah.
And for the changing gender Leonid storyline, costume plays a big part in that as well. My costume's gorgeous.
Yes, it is. Deborah got spoiled. Just a gorgeous handmade costume.
Yeah, yeah. So really, even just to look at the show, it's a lovely thing to take in.
Very cool.
And what about those bushes?
I do love the shrubbery.
You've got bushes too?
Bushes that move.
Yeah,
the show has everything.
Yeah. One of the fun technical builds for this show were these three relatively large moving bushes. And, you know, it's just a reminder of why you love theater. Because under no other circumstance would I ever take the time, energy, and effort to build three large movable bushes. And so it's a joy. I can cross that off my bucket list.
Yeah, finally it's done.
Yeah.
So why don't we got to do our 20-minute after the hour stuff, but why don't we let people know how they can get tickets or find out more or check out what you're doing?
Absolutely. You're encouraged to go to our website, inlandclassical.com, and click on this season where you can follow the ticket link. You can also go to the Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture's website, or you can find us on social media. All paths lead to changing money.
And the show's winner, what's left for people to watch?
Absolutely. So Friday, Saturday, 7 o'clock this weekend, Sunday, 5 o'clock. Those are your times and dates.
All right. That's easy enough to remember. I'm going to play a little bit of music while I load up my computer with the stuff I'm supposed to play 20 minutes after the hour. So we got a little Floating Homes of the Future from the house band The Green Warriors, as you probably would have guessed. Here we go. Let's play some of that, and then we'll be right back. Receive support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street in Spokane. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com.
Out and About receives support from Eastern Washington University, the region's polytechnic, offering an increased emphasis on real-world, hands-on learning to build career-ready skills and a lifelong community. More information at ewu.edu.
Hey, this is DJ Downlow from Inside the Hype Radio. Thousands of people choose KYRS as their radio station every week, and we want you to be a part of our family. Just text GIVE KYRS to the number 44321 and make KYRS your radio station.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for June 22nd through the 25th. Monday, Hannah Boundy at Zola, Hotel Mira and Sex with Seneca at the District, and the Mac Movement open mic with T. Dodger celebrating Pride at the Red Room. Tuesday, Brandon Humphreys at 1919 Wine Cellar, Jameson Sampson and the All-Star Jam at Zola, Standard Deviation at the Rocket Market, and Pop Free, Charlie Horse, Mary Hill, and Bad Trip Motel at the Big Dipper. Wednesday, the Night Market, with snacks at midnight, Jonah Gallegos, Deb the Wolf, and others at Kendall Yards, Francis Anchetta and Aki Fumikado at Zola, Gold Pine at the Chameleon, Imagine Jazz at the Mac, Terrapin Flyer at the District, Open Mic with Derek Hart at the Checkerboard, and the Downtown Get Down Jam at the Red Room. Thursday, the Rusty Jackson Band at Coeur d'Alene Park and Brown's Edition, Avea Emerson and Time Worm at Zola, Carl and Wes and the Wood Dusters at the Big Dipper, and Tomboy at Brick West. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
Spokane Regional Health District reminds listeners that a routine septic system check is easier and cheaper than a backyard disaster. More information at srhd.org.
Okay, we're back, and I have to admit, I just saw a septic on there under the PSAs, and I was curious, so I had to play this 10-second septic spot, which is good advice.
It is solid advice.
And you don't know, I mean, maybe somebody might have put a septic tank in your backyard you don't even know about. Have it, check it out. You know,
it happens every day.
As the kids say. So we kind of left, but, you know, there was a lot of discord about things that should have been said.
Open conflict.
There was open conflict.
It was a straight fight.
Downplay a little bit.
Like where the play is.
Yeah, where the play is.
It is where it's at the MAC.
Indeed.
Which is the Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture.
Yeah.
Outside in their amphitheater.
In the MAC, of course, is in Brown's Edition.
Yeah, in Spokane.
Look for the statue of the deer with the gopher with the owl and the fish standing on it. You'll know,
and they have a brand new exhibit that's wonderful too. That you come see the exhibit, come see all the knights and, and their armor and their swords, and then just stay for the play.
Yeah,
you do that.
That's a good idea.
Spend a day at the museum.
Yeah,
yeah.
What was the second thing we needed to talk about? Oh, the ticket prices.
Ticket prices. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so you can get your very own personal individualized tickets to the Triumph of Love for the low price of $15 for general admission. But wait. It's better.
Huh?
I see that sparkle in your eye, Maeve. It doesn't get better.
How can it be any better than that?
If you happen to be a member of the Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture,
what?
You can get your tickets for the low price of $12.
Oh,
could you believe it? Steve, have you ever seen ticket prices like that in this town?
I have never seen that, but wait, there's more.
What?
I happen to know a few people that took advantage of it, yet another discount, because for $12 for the show, if you're a student, you can go as well. So students also get $12 admission. Mm-hmm. So students, come see our show.
If you're a student and a member of the MAC, they will pay you to go to the show.
I think so. I'm not quoting that.
That's a legally binding agreement.
Well, you know, and that's, you know, I just think this is just be like a great cheap date. I mean, become a MAC member, you go see the night thing for free, and then you kind of slide over to the amphitheater, pay your $12, and
enjoy the beer garden as well before you enter the show.
There's a beer garden too.
Of course, there is.
You haven't had any rowdies from the beer garden, have you?
Only the best kind. Only the kind we want.
Oh, yeah.
We like our crowds a little bit rowdy.
I know that there's a classical rowdy group now in town that rowdies that just only rally around classical things.
That's what they call themselves too. The rowdies.
Classical rowdies. Yeah.
The play, though, it's an elegant discussion of love versus reason. It's fun, and you'll laugh, and you'll giggle, and you'll chuckle. But it has some lovely meat on the bones, too.
You know, Deborah, what you just did is you just lifted us out of the muck.
Well, I'll try. That's my job in the play.
Yeah, you just lifted us up. You elevated everything here. And I'm gonna try to stay elevated.
Maeve, will you give me the opportunity to get on my soapbox?
As you see, you're already on a soapbox, so I guess you'd have to do it.
Oh, let me get another one. There
we go. Oh, man, you're super tight. Move that microphone. Okay, you're looking very good.
Maeve, could you do me a favor? Could you ask me why our ticket prices are so reasonable?
You know, I couldn't help but notice that these ticket prices seem to be more reasonable. This is in American dollars, correct?
Yes, not Canadian.
Well, how can that be?
Well, the reason for that, Maeve, is a very important reason.
Huh.
And the reason is that we actually believe that community theater belongs to the community.
Wow.
And we operate in a way where we keep our overhead costs to the very, very bare minimum. So we're not passing on space rent. We're not passing on lighting equipment. We're not passing on a thousand other things that theater companies have to pay for. We are operating lean, but to the highest quality of lean that we possibly can. So every single dollar we get goes directly into our show and to our standards to produce an excellent product for an incredibly reasonable price. So yes, we could be charging, let's say, $1,000 would be reasonable for a show of this quality, of no doubt, I'm sure. But one of the mottos over here at ICT that echoes around the boardroom is that we don't make art to make money. We make money to make art.
Wow.
So we want to make sure that everybody can afford to come to a show. And if you can't afford the $15 or the $12, please feel free to reach out to info@inlandclassical.com and we will get you taken care of.
No, that's good. Up until about 3 minutes ago, I would have said, you guys are unsung heroes. But now you're totally sung.
Yeah, I did a whole opera right there.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
We're going to have to cut for another ad break. Okay, give me a minute while I get off these soapboxes.
Okay.
Where did these come from?
Careful. All right. So how has the audience reacted to this play? I mean, compared to like, say, harken back to your Shakespeare days, pretty common. I mean, you find the same audience, same reactions, or are people kind of like bowled over a little bit more in this?
Yeah, so a lot of old faces I recognize, a lot and a lot and a lot of new ones. I think that's one of the pleasures of working over at the Mac is that, you know, this is a new segment of town for us. It's a new audience population. So we get to introduce ourselves for the very first time. And reception has been incredibly warm. Mm-hmm. I think it was last Thursday. The rowdy crowd was out.
Oh, boy, those guys love me,
a rowdy crowd.
Yeah.
They were very fun to work with.
Oh, that's good.
I talk too much. Over to that side.
Yeah. I mean, Thursday and Saturday last week, it felt like we had laugh tracks going in the background. Mm-hmm. And to Deborah's point, I think the comic relief helps like balance out. There is a ton of really, really like sharp wisdom that comes out of this story. But great crowds. And I think one of the things that's nice about the fact that Inland Classical chose this translation is it is more accessible for audiences too. So when I think about like my work, when I've done classical work before, I get different levels of like, I really loved it. I didn't understand all of it, but I loved it.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that once from anybody that came to see it. Everybody was like, I loved the whole thing. They never had trouble understanding what was going on. They followed every bit of it. So this translation does feel a little more accessible, I think, than some. Yeah.
And I think especially for a show that most audiences are probably not familiar with. I know I wasn't familiar with it when we first started talking about it and when our director, Scott Dowdy, pitched it. For a play that is not familiar, every person I have talked to after the show has just been so bowled over by how lovely it is and how funny it is and how heartwarming it is. And we've had people say, you know, I'm going to come and I'm going to bring more people because I need more people to see this show.
Wow. That is, you know, that doesn't seem like in this town, it's all just word of mouth. I mean, that's sort of how shows sell out is word of mouth. So Abby pitched this show, which that was sort of her show she wanted to pitch.
So Scott Dowdy, our director.
Scott did. Okay.
So I believe, and Jeff can corroborate this if I'm wrong.
He's still climbing down.
So Abby, too many. So Abby and Jeff had approached Scott about a directing project, asked him if there was a script that he was particularly interested in directing. And so this was the script that he pitched to us. And it's one that he had directed in the past. He had seen a production at Seattle Rep that was directed by Stephen Wadsworth, and he's always loved the script. But you know, and he's told us many a time that every iteration that he's done or interacted with before has not been as special as this one.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah,
you know, it always seems like when you have somebody coming up, that especially somebody who wants to direct the show, pitching it, it's just to me, it's always like, when it was with Stage Left, it was like, oh, good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's like somebody who's enthusiastic about the work really is a cool thing.
That he did say, quote, we are the bestest.
Yes.
Whoa.
Those exact words.
You could not be more betterest. Yeah. That's good.
I wrote it in my journal.
Yeah.
I tattooed it on my foot.
He's got that. You
now,
there.
I had a question, and this is going to be one that's probably I'm going to lose a lot of listeners on because nobody's going to care. But I noticed...
Did Abby memorize all those lines? Is that your question?
I didn't. It's fake. I'm just reading off of a card.
Deborah, I noticed that your character... Now, so is it Leontine? Okay, so there is another character, Hesione, that was I read about. Does that ring a bell for anybody?
And that rings like the that was, vaguest of
so
bells.
So it seems like there was like another
in our plot.
Yes, and so but there was like another sibling.
Emmacrat. Emmacrat is my sibling. He's my brother.
Yeah, and but it seemed like there was another sibling of his in this. And
we
I just wondered if they combined
the first act.
They live in the walls.
Yeah, they're up in the duct heating. I wonder why you built all that heating duct system that they could crawl
into.
She's
behind for an extra $5, you get the hidden scene that we play at the end of the
Easter
show.
Egg.
Yeah. Nice. Could not get the love out of that one.
Okay.
So
just for monthly donors.
Okay, well, that was a path that I went down. Yeah. That was a total dead end, which is
apparently familiar.
There are a lot of names in this show. There are a lot of my character Leonid has two alter egos that she plays with.
Okay,
and honestly, that is one of the hardest parts of this show is just making sure that we say the right name because a lot of them are
Jeff.
Very similar.
Oh, Jeff kept calling Leontine Leonid.
Now, a
for some unknown
mistake, surely.
Well,
surely.
And Jeff, you have experience in this Harlequin field.
Oh, yes.
You kind of gravitate towards that role.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So, way back in the day, I was introduced to Commedia dell'arte. After I graduated college, I shacked up with this touring Shakespeare company, and that was their whole thing. They did Shakespeare cross-hybridized with Commedia dell'arte, and that's where I fell in love with it, and I've missed it very dearly. So anytime anybody invites to throw a mask on stage, I say yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. And I'm supposed you guys can't answer this question, but if Scott was going to be here, I was going to ask him, and maybe you guys might see elements of this, you know, Scott being the principal of Spokane Playwrights Laboratory. Are there things that he looks at with this play that goes like, I think they had just tightened this part up or left none of that? You don't hear anything like that?
I know of such a thing. This is the deep lore.
Okay.
Are you prepared for
I'm not prepared for anything.
So when you read the play for the first time, the ending is a little bit of a head scratcher. On the page, it doesn't read like an ending. And just like massive hats off to Scott on figuring out how to make that ending not only something that makes sense, but is something that's really, really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And like huge hats off to Deb and Steve over there is that final moment of the play is them. And it's just gorgeous.
Okay, so we know you guys don't die in the place. Spoiler alert.
Well, you don't know that for sure.
Yeah.
That's true.
That could be the happy ending.
On stage.
There's an ominous movement towards the ductwork.
That's where this character that you brought up comes in. Popping out
sir,
of the wall.
Sir not appearing in this film. How do you think the story would connect with people of today?
I'm going to steal an answer. So I think one of the chief priorities that Scott talked about really early on in producing this work is that he wanted to kind of relish in the idea that you can step away from the world and just forget about your problems for a little while. And I think it resonated strongly with him, and it certainly resonates strongly with me that mm-hmm. sometimes it can be difficult to find joy in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And so this play is an open invitation to set the world at the door, come in, forget about it all for just a little while, and just find joy. I think a lot of this play is about allowing joy to enter into your life.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and for my character, speaking of that ending, one of the things I really love about this play is that Leonid, she does succeed at the end. She does triumph over Leontine and Amokrat, but it's in a way that is, it doesn't shame them. There's really no true villain. And as cheesy as it might sound, everybody does really get their happy ending. And it is just, it is the loveliest way to tie up the story that is about love and acceptance. And I think it's just, yeah, it's just really beautiful, especially in the garden when it starts to get dark and the music's, just, it's probably one of the most beautiful productions that I've ever been a part of.
Oh, how wonderful. I hear you as far as that, just wanting to see beauty and enjoy yourself and all that. We're kind of, we need to be distancing ourselves sometimes and do that, I think. What other kind of stories does Inland Classical Theater want to do?
Oh, boy, if my heart screams for Shakespeare. I just love it oh so very much. So I'm optimistic about that. Our definition of classical is pretty broad and wide.
Elevated language, is that part of it, or is it?
So my elevator pitch is everything from the Greeks to modern day classics like Tennessee Williams. We are interested in those works. We're interested in contemporary examinations of classical works. We just kind of frankly believe that the sad thing about classic stories is sometimes they get forgotten. And it's not that they're not good or they're not great. They just kind of die out. And I think, noting that The Triumph of Love has had a number of adaptations, movies, musicals, but when you tell people that we're performing The Triumph of Love, the response is, what?
Yeah.
But this is not, I would not call this adaptation elevated language.
Oh, certainly not.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. So it is very, very accessible.
Okay, very cool. And is this adaptation, is it kind of like the movie? I don't know if anybody has anybody.
Yeah, seen it is like the movie except for the ending. The ending on the movie is very different.
Ours is better. Is what Deb is trying to say.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of similarities. The obviously they don't have the Commedia, which that part of it is wonderful and it's such a great addition. And I'm going to give a plug to Jeffrey because he didn't plug himself, but Jeffrey also taught our other Zani players. So the other folks that are doing Commedia had never really done that work before, other than Jazz had done a little bit, I think. And Jeffrey had Zani school every day at rehearsal for them. So that's shows you how much he knows and loves.
Well, I'm a recipient of Jeffrey's teaching when you did those classes on Shakespeare.
Yes,
that was so enjoyable.
Absolutely,
you're a very good instructor. Do you think when you read this farce, right? I mean, it's a farce. Do you think have we changed as people from this time? I mean, as far as who we are.
No. I don't think so.
I find this story highly relatable. I actually have someone very close to me in my life who I draw a lot from for Amokrat, because there is a tendency sometimes to, when things are hard, to close off from all of the things that kind of open us back up again. And that's easy to do, again, if you can stay away from it. But joy is persistent, right? Love is persistent. So someone that I was very close to spent a lot of their life that way and then found the door open to this and was just kind of completely taken over by it. And it's really funny to be in a show that's sort of very similar to that person's life. So, pretty cool.
That's lovely. And, I think the thing, there's a lot of worry about AI right now and all that. And it's like, which I feel it's justified. But that's the one thing, if you go see theater, you're going to get those joy vibes off of the people in the play that you're not going to get from probably from a movie, or certainly not from an animated AI character. I mean, there's just a real joy. And that's, I think, like the audience is, the audience is definitely part of your show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, 100%.
There are several instances throughout the show where we're pulling the audience in with us.
Oh,
and
fun.
We're involving them in the story. And, you know, yeah, we want them to feel as much like they are sitting in this garden with us.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool.
No AI was used in the making of this production.
Except for the bushes. The bushes are pure AI.
What about any animals? Were there any animals harmed?
Well, Steve.
Oh, Steve was harmed a lot?
A little bit.
One other thing I wanted to say was, you know, is it relatable today to people today? You know, a good, healthy balance of love and reason mm-hmm. is good for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's kind of, you know, part of the human condition, I guess I would say.
Right.
Is finding that balance. Because there's, you know, points to be made for Aristocrat's reason and points to be made for following your heart and being in love. And it's especially wonderful if you can find a healthy balance of that. And so I think, yes, it's very relatable to folks today, even though it was written in 1732.
Well, and reading about it, too, that it might have been a play that was kind of ahead of its time, too, because initially it was not well received. But as time went on, people really did kind of enjoy the play more, and it became more of a big deal. So I think sometimes these things are just, you know, not, maybe this guy was ahead of his time when he wrote it. I don't know.
Was the Age of Enlightenment, right?
Yeah.
Late 17 or mid 1700s. So that question was kind of the zeitgeist of the, is that the right word? Sounds like it's the right word.
Yeah, I think you nailed it.
I'm going to say it again.
Roll with
zeitgeist
it.
Of society at that time.
Yeah.
You know, is it the mind that we follow that should be the judge of everything, or is it the heart?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. I think, and maybe I worry too much about the AI stuff a little bit, but I just think that you know, they've already done studies of people kind of losing the facilities to plan or to do things or to research or to read due to AI. And I think maybe this would be a good thing for people to, you know, to make that head-heart connection and, you know, fight the man.
Oh, let me grab that.
Keep
stop.
It human.
Let me grab that soapbox okay. from all right, real quick. All right, right. All right. Get up on my soapbox now.
Very nice.
Now, speaking to your point, Maeve.
Okay.
No, I think it's an interesting time to be alive. I really do believe that theater is of more value today than it was yesterday or the day before, and maybe a couple years back. I mean, the idea that you can come in, and again, for the low, low price of how much, buddy?
$12 if you're a member of the Mac.
$12 if you're a member of the Mac. You can watch real human beings engage in a beautiful story, in a beautiful outdoor space, for nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is good for the soul in a way that I think many, many of us need. And
yeah, it's easy to get bogged down in all this stuff.
Yeah. Know? Put your phone down, open your eyes.
Yeah.
Have a laugh, have a think, have a feel.
Yeah. This is a disparate, maybe a little bit off topic. Well, it is off topic. But I borrowed a book from the library, Spokane Urban's Urban Railroad. And then inside it, there's a guy, and it's called Memories of a Motorman. And he kind of talks about coming to run the streetcars in the 20s. And it's written so well. This guy who is it's funny. It's enlightening. It's outrageous. But he also he talks about like the switches he has to pull at various times. Like this was like a full body experience, four or five things, plus taking tickets from people. And I just think, the people keeping this alive right now, this ability to do these kind of things, are theater people.
Absolutely.
I mean, feel that way.
I mean, just, you know, just even, getting your mind in the right place, not just, you know, believing your lines, but also just the root of, you know, where am I going to stash my costume for this change, all that stuff, mm-hmm. you know? And I just think that, theater people may be our last hope. And circus performers. But,
I think that's fair. Yeah.
A little too long for a tattoo, but pretty good.
Yeah. Anyway, why don't we tell people we're going to be buttoning up things here pretty soon. But why don't we let people know once again how they can get tickets? And it sounds like a pretty fun show. How do people get tickets?
I'll take the easy part. You guys take the hard part. Inland Classical Theater. Nope. You see, I already messed it up. InlandClassical.com. What are you going to do? That's our website. Click on current season. Ticket button's right there. And when are we performing, Steve?
We will be performing this Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 5 p.m.
And where are we performing, Deb?
We are at the MAC, which is the Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture, outside in their amphitheater.
Oh, that sounds so...
Oh, bring a pillow. Bring a little cushy something or another for your tush.
How's the weather looking? You guys have had good weather so far.
Saying our prayers.
In the room.
I've been keeping my eye on the weather very, very closely over the last couple of days. And the honest truth of the matter is, hour by hour, the forecast changes.
Yeah.
So, we might as well talk about the refund policy. So, if the show gets canceled, you're absolutely entitled to a refund. If there's a day that we're pretty sure we're going to get rained out on, we will 100% reach out to you, give you the opportunity to grab a refund or move to a different night. We are exploring indoor spaces. We're in the midst of the logistics of that. And to segue back to the performance stuff, I feel like we missed a key detail. Did we talk about the price?
The MAC members.
Oh, the MAC. Oh, yes. If you're a MAC member or a student, you can get your ticket for $12. Now, Maeve.
Yeah?
I see this collection, this veritable mountain of soapboxes to my right.
Yes, I brought those
once more time.
Yep.
So,
Climb.
Now, you may be wondering to yourself, oh, boy, I like these individuals. Sounds like they've got a good mission. Sounds like they really just want to make art for their community. How could I support them? Well, I'll tell you. You can sign up for our mailing list so you know what we're doing, so you can come see our shows at info@inlandclassical.com. You can send an email to become a volunteer as well. And what I'm really going to make an impassioned appeal for is if you value classical works in your community, if you think that we've got potential in that moxie that you're looking for, could I suggest that what we really need is recurrent monthly donors, just at the price of $1, $5. I'd be incredibly grateful for $10.
You have a look of gratitude on your face right now.
Indeed, I do. It's the soapbox angle is what it is.
It's far away, but I can
see. And Jeff, what can they get at a certain monthly donor level?
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad that you asked. We've got a little gift for our $5 a month donors. We have these tastefully branded little blankets that you can cozy up in or keep your derriere dry when we're sitting on the grass. If you become a monthly donor, you are really very much making a difference in our ability to continue producing classical works for many years to come. With much love, I turn it back to the host of this show.
Well, go ahead.
I've fallen.
Yep.
Get off soapboxes.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And you're falling into the hole by the soapboxes.
The splinters
so
everywhere.
So sad. Oh.
Just brush it off.
Oh, my
fine.
Gosh. This show, it's a mess. Deborah, elevate us.
Follow your heart and follow it to the MAC this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to see the triumph of love.
That was so good. Amen.
Okay, that's the end of this show. Well, probably just for this week. You never know. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and or 92.3 FM. I'll see you all next week.
This wind now routinely surpasses coal as a supplier of electricity to America. And last month, solar power also surpassed coal. Political bullying aside, renewables are the future. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
KYRS Medical Lake Spokane Thin Air Community Radio, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM, 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
The following program was pre-recorded.
From New York, this is Democracy Now! This weekend, an Israeli airstrike killed Al Jazeera cameraman Ahmed Wisha. Officially, there's a ceasefire in Gaza, but the picture on the ground tells a different story. We'll talk about the targeting of journalists from Gaza to Lebanon with Drop Site News editor Sharif Abdelkadous.
Israel has killed yet another journalist in Gaza and bragged about it. And it is exporting its practices to Lebanon, which has become the deadliest place in the world in 2026 for journalists. And all of this is happening as the world continues to look away and is not paying attention to this unprecedented slaughter.
In Lebanon, acclaimed sea turtle conservationist Mona Khalil died Friday after she was hit by an Israeli airstrike 2 weeks ago.
This is not a project that belongs to me. It belongs to Lebanon. It belongs to the whole world. The turtles are not mine.
Then a new CorpWatch report, MAGA Inc., will speak to the author, Prathap Chatterjee.
We are all being taken for a ride by the corporations that have bankrolled Donald Trump, the crypto czars, the tech titans, and the prison profiteers.
Finally, it's primary day here in New York, also in Maryland and Utah. We'll talk to Jacobin columnist Liza Featherstone. Her recent piece headlined, NYC Socialists Are Trying to Expand Their Electoral Wins. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Iranian diplomats say technical talks with the Trump administration aimed at ending the U.S. war in Iran have concluded in Switzerland with agreements on sanctions relief and the release of frozen Iranian assets. The U.S. Treasury Department announced it would waive sanctions for 60 days, allowing Iran to produce and sell crude oil and petrochemical products. President Trump said Monday Iran would use the funds exclusively to buy food from U.S. farmers, including corn and soybeans. The governor of Iran's central bank quickly countered Trump's claim, saying Iran was